Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. We took a little break from our regular podcast, Wednesday International Break. We did a few patron interviews, but it's great to be back with everyone today. So Calcio's coming back this weekend. We have the Milan Derby coming up. So we're, of course, going to preview it on the show. I interviewed our dear friend Richard Hall to talk about the Derby, the current one, put it kind of in historical context as well. With Serie A coming back, we, of course, have thousands of names, game picks. And I'm very excited. We've been wanting to do a deep dive on Atalanta for some time. Mark Doyle stepped up to the plate. Really, really fun interview at the end of the podcast. We chatted a lot about Atalanta, did over-unders for all their strikers. So I think you will really enjoy that. And of course, we have a part of the podcast just for our patrons. But we know international breaks were rough enough even before COVID. This one was particularly painful. I'm going to be 100% honest. I took a complete break from football. I was very busy with the transfer window. It mercifully ended. So I took a complete break. But for people like Alex, who are really plugged into the game all the time, I know this one was rough. So Alex, tell me, how was your first COVID international break? And how dreadful was it even compared to the previous one, which we know were never easy to get through to begin with?
Yeah, I hate them. I hate them in general. I really do. I'll tell any player I ever speak with that I hate them. I don't care if the player loves them. And I think on average, players are more accepting of them because there's the whole pride of representing your country. Or David, if you don't represent your country, you get a holiday. You get some type of vacation. So yeah, you do have to train a bit at your club, and you will. But usually that's the second week of the international break. You will get a little time off that you normally wouldn't. So players are more accepting of them. However, let me quickly say that I don't think players liked this go around. I just had Asmir Begovic on my podcast, who of course was on loan at AC Milan last season.
And yeah,
I'm sure many listeners know who Asmir Begovic is. He is one of the nicest players I've ever had the pleasure of speaking to. And even when I asked him about the international break, he of course didn't probably mean for it to sound controversial or harsh, but listening back, I noticed the part where he definitely made a point to call out how many games there were in this break in such a cramped space. And I think, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think the players feel like they're objects to a certain point. So that's a shame. And here's where I get extra frustrated, is I don't want to really get like, it's definitely not political, but I don't even want to get topical with COVID because it's just such a messy conversation when you bring it up. But what are we doing having players travel all over the world when there's this issue? I mean, you just saw the remarkable, remarkable results the NBA had in their bubble. And you see with the NFL, I'm not sure how plugged in people are listening to what's going on in America with the NFL, but pretty much you got to question if your team is going to play every week in the NFL because it's a mess in the NFL with the COVID testing. But the NBA, it was in a bubble, cohesive. They could control what was in front of them, and they had remarkably nothing, nothing. And now this football is deciding to send players all over the world to different countries. And now we're adding on a third game because of how crammed this season's going to be. So that's just stupid, in my opinion, David. I don't care what the reason is. Of course, the reason at the end of the day is going to be money. I don't have to get the answer. I know the answer. And you got to follow the schedule and protocol. Not the time. Not the time. And if I want to get a little petty, well, Chelsea, who really had such an annoying season last year with injuries, they statistically had the most significant injuries in the Premier League for the top six, whatever, classic big six. It was annoying. And then finally, we have Ziyech and Pulisic coming back to full fitness. We just got our new goalkeeper, Mendy. Our international break starts with Mendy withdrawing from Senegal for injury. So now we have to start thinking about Kepa again. Then all of a sudden, Ben Chilwell, after he admittedly kind of broke protocol with COVID for a birthday party, Ben Chilwell, once he finally is with England, his plantar fasciitis is a bit sore, so he gets sent home. Hopefully he's fine. Then N'Golo Kante on Wednesday doesn't play for France. He withdrew because of some, I don't know, muscle soreness. So, David, this is annoying. It's just really, really annoying. However, I do have to say, it did seem like this go-around, some international managers were a bit more understanding about club managers. So as much as I want to rant, and I just gave you a little bit of my mind on the international break, I think it was stupid to have players go all over the world and especially to have three games. But I will say, to be somewhat objective, I do think that like maybe players withdrew this time around and wouldn't in a normal break where there's two, because I think international teams were a bit more understanding of how tough this was on not just the players, but then their club managers. So I'm still absolutely annoyed by international breaks in general. I'm really annoyed by the fact that we just obviously made the COVID numbers go up by doing this. Should we be surprised? We shouldn't be surprised that Ronaldo tested positive and that more and more players are testing positive. And David, I always like to say, no, I don't. That's a lie. I don't think I've ever said this before, but I'm going to say it now. I think leagues shouldn't always copy each other, but they should take positive results and try and implement them in their sport. And the NBA just did everything right. I know it's a whole different thing. I know you can't put all of these footballers in a bubble. I get that. But just kind of the theme of, oh, they stayed in a certain area and there wasn't as much of a problem. Very, very interesting. I just don't think it's rocket science. So from a COVID standpoint, it wasn't surprising. But from a footballing standpoint too, David, last thing, it's just like these games often just stink. Like me selfishly, I'd love seeing Kai Havertz and Timo Werner dominate for Germany. That's great. I mean, as a Chelsea fan, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch for a long, long time. So great. Awesome. But still, like, these games, especially without fans, and international friendly too, Nations League's a bit different, but without fans, nah, as they would say in England, can't be arsed for that, really can't. So, yeah, I give it a 1 out of 10, my international break, a 1 out of 10. So, David, that was my break, but clearly you had a bit of a different one, so how'd yours go?
Yeah, so first of all, great job, Alex. I really appreciate your perspective. It's always great because you're close to many players. Begovic is great. So really, really appreciate your perspective. It's nice to hear how it impacts them personally. Yeah, as I mentioned, I in general, I don't mind international breaks for two reasons, because I always love the Euro and the World Cup. And in my opinion, I kind of see the international breaks as the price to pay for those tournaments being good. But, you know, in my opinion, I think there's definitely value in players playing together on the national teams. But there's a big but, the environment that we are in right now. And I understand, you know, there's TV rights, this Nation League. I understand there's been a lot at stake that's been, you know, postponed because of COVID. I understand the nature of professional sports. Is that, you know, they need to make this money. Unfortunately, that's the bottom line. It is a business. So I appreciate all that. But, you know, it becomes a little bit harder to digest in the COVID world. Obviously, we've seen many of the players testing positive, a lot, you know, some that were even supposed to be involved in the derby. We mentioned Ronaldo. So no doubt about it. I think the NBA bubble is a great analogy. I think it's no coincidence that a league that listened closely to scientists and really consulted with them and tried to come up with something. Kudos to them. I think it's absolutely incredible. They're close to 3 months. The players in the bubble, no positive tests, is unbelievable. But yes, I am with you, Alex. It's very hard to have that similar thing in European football. So definitely rough. I took a little break. It was nice, but I am excited to have Calcio back. So let's get to the derby and let's start with our friend Richard Hall. So I'm very excited to preview the Milan derby with our dear friend Richard Hall. Of course, you guys know him. He's the chief correspondent for Football Italia. He's the creator of one of my favorite sites, The Gentleman Ultra, here in the U.S. You can hear him at times on Sirius XM. Now, Richard, obviously, since he's the chief correspondent at Football Italia, knows about all of calcio, but he does have a big passion for the Milan derby. So there's no one better to talk to with this game coming up. So Richard, my dear friend, always wonderful to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcio Land.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's always good to be back. And yeah, it's the Milan derby, and it's always exciting, and even these strange and wonderful times, let's call them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in recent years, you know, there's no denying this. Inter has done definitely better in the derbies. But, you know, Milan's definitely on the rise. They're off to a fast start to the season, even without some key players. So we know the balance of power in recent years has really shifted towards Inter in the derby. But when you look at the transfer window, do you think Milan has bridged the gap, or has Inter improved it? Increased it even more? So this is a nice way of asking, which team do you think improved the most this summer during the transfer window?
It's really strange because I think they've both done fantastic jobs, but they're in two completely different periods in their project, in a sense.
Yeah.
I think Inter are ahead, and the reason I say that is because, you know, when Sonin came in and the investment they put behind the team and where they wanted to get to, you know, they wanted to be challenging Juventus. They wanted to get, you know, obviously into the Champions League regularly. And now it's got to the point where, you know, after the Europa League final, we all know what happened with Antonio Conte, the outburst, we should say, whether it's calculated or I think it was a bit of both, also very much from the heart, knowing Antonio Conte. He almost said, look, you back me or you don't. It's as simple as this. And I mean, I said this before, but with Inter, I do believe that Antonio Conte, I think from an Eritrean perspective, we have to look at this as in, we saw the way that he exited Juventus. It's Antonio Conte that is bothered about Antonio Conte's career, and that's fair enough. And if he can leave Juventus as he did, you know, he's certainly not going to care about Inter long term. So we have to accept that he's here to win and here to win now. And I think that's a really important point, because when you look at the transfer window, he convinced you know, all of the board and at Inter to say, I want these players, the likes of Kolarov, the likes of Vidal, to come in because they're seasoned professionals, they're veterans. Okay, yes, I know Hakimi came in and has really took everyone by storm, but this is a team that's got he wants that balance to win the title and challenge Juventus, because he saw Andrea Pirlo come in and he thought, this is the chance. Now, with saying that's fine. There's a lot of problems when, uproar, should we say, not problems, uproar, when Sandro Tonali did go to Milan, which I'll talk about in a second. But Conte is almost saying, listen, I'm going to die on my own sword here if we don't win the Scudetto. So for me, you know, they set themselves up well in that sense. Meanwhile, when you look at Milan, I think, you know, they're looking to build a team that's a bit of a different model. They're looking to buy, for me, some of the better younger players, not to sell them on, but to develop them there. And I think that their sort of range of finances are allowing them to go out. And you know, you look at the likes of Brahim Diaz, for instance, and obviously the aforementioned Sandro Tagnoli. And I think that what they're doing is building a team that, you know, is going to be that unit of players that can develop and grow together for the next 5+ years. I'm really impressed, not only with Milan and the way they've come on at the end of the last season and the beginning of this, but also with Pioli as a coach, because he's changed my thought. Well, what I thought of Pioli has changed. So I think that both clubs have done really well, but they're at just different stages of development.
Yeah, no, I think that's very fair. That's very fair. So, Richard, it's hard. Momentum's very hard, especially with an international break, especially in the COVID era. So I want to ask you this, and you can really take it from any angle you'd like. In your opinion, if you had to say which team goes into this game with more momentum, which one would it be and why?
It's difficult. It really is, because I look at Inter, and you know, we have to take all the effects of everything that's happened. And, you know, it's been exciting to watch them. I mean, it's been giving me a heart attack at points as well, especially the Fiorentina game. But you're looking, you know, I mean, it's almost like Antonio Conte has, this season, almost said, you know what, we're going to just outscore teams. It's almost like Bielsa's taken over him. It's bizarre. well, that wasn't until Lazio. I was actually impressed with the performance against Lazio, even though it was a draw, because they defensively were better. They had longer periods of the game where they kept the possession, and it seemed like they were getting back into what we know Conte's Inter is. But the first two games against Fiorentina and Benevento, with the 9 goals, was impressive. And it's also great because numerous players are now on the score sheet. So for that reason, I think Inter really do go into it. Would have gone into it. I'm sure we're going to discuss this. Would have gone into it as favourites. But I look at Milan and, you know, the game against, we'll leave the Europa League out of it in that crazy game, but the game against Crotone was well managed, clean sheet, and the game against Spezia as well, you know, clean sheet, and they're scoring goals. So it's really difficult to say. They're both in good form, and that's why I think it could be a really, really good game, because Milan have got arguably the better defence at the moment, and they look more solid, but they're going to have to keep out one of the most free-scoring teams in the league. So I think we're in for a good game here.
Absolutely. So, you know, you are, especially with the Gentleman Ultra, I love how you guys look at the history of the game. So let me ask you, as someone who has such a passion and knowledge of the derby, historically, how much does momentum matter? Do you think the derby teaches us that maybe it doesn't matter that much, that the underdog sometimes may have an edge? Like, how do you see that playing in the historical context?
Yeah, I think in some respects, that's a really tough question in one way, because sometimes we've seen, I think when we take it historically, we have to look at the era when both Milan and Inter were at the top of the game, because there have been seasons where one or the other club has been in a really bad way, and I don't think it's really fair to compare that. But momentum in the derby, I think you can look back over many seasons. I mean, I remember Nicola Berti's goal, I think in 1992-93. You know, you beat that Milan side, and it's unbelievable, you know, because what Arrigo Sacchi's Milan were just all conquering at that point. There's many times when I think that derbies have flipped, and it hasn't really, you know, I always find that it's never stopped the course of the season for the team that's in form. It never seems to really, you know, blow away. I don't remember that many derbies where I thought, oh, it's really cost them. You know, there's been blips in form. But yeah, it's an interesting question. And the reason it's really interesting is because when those blips happen, it's because the derby in Milan is so full on and the crowd is so incredible that it can really rise a team, you know, that's maybe a couple of places down the league or however, whatever, many points behind them, to go and beat potentially the stronger of the Milanese clubs. And it is always on that passion and the fans, and it often depends on what's going on out of the behind the off the pitch, sorry. You know, if there's disputes, we always remember the ones where Milan were complaining about the ownership,
yeah,
and yet still managed to do well against Inter. But there's a real backdrop of how the curva, the choreography relates to the players. And that's why this game's so weird, because, again, we have none of that. So normally, if you ask me that question, I'm saying form's irrelevant in a sense. But I actually think it is important in this one, because I do think a lot of those emotions are stirred by the crowd.
Absolutely. So now let's talk a bit more about this specific one. And there's two players that really interest me for kind of similar reasons. So Calhanoglu has had really an amazing resurgence under Pioli, and some would say Ibrahimovic. And Lautaro's off to a strong start to the season after, you know, he seemed a little bit distracted by all the transfer rumors. But if you had to guess at the end of the season, who do you think will look back and say had a better season between Lautaro and Calhanoglu?
I think that we'll probably say Lautaro, because I just think that his development and his partnership with Lukaku, it's just going from strength to strength. And I think when you add Barella and Hakimi and the supply he's going to get, I think he's only going to, both of those players, Lukaku and Martinez, will just keep piling in with the goals this season. So I think that is certainly the case. And I think that his overall value, his overall, how people view him in the game in comparison to some of the best in the world will really set him up. But And Canelogu, you look at that and the way he's coming on. Now he's playing like the player we all thought he was. You know, there's incredible passing range, there's ridiculous shots. You know, the link-up play, he's absolutely brilliant. But he's come from a level where he really wasn't performing. So he's the most improved out of the two is probably Canelogu, because he'd set himself a pretty low benchmark at one point. But I think overall, Lautaro is just going from strength to strength. So we'll probably be looking at him at the end of the season and thinking, you know, well, Inter will be thinking we need to get him to sign that contract.
Absolutely. Well said. So the derby, obviously, you know, we can expect Lukaku, Ibrahimovic, Theo Hernandez, these big name players on each club. But sometimes the derby is decided by an unsung hero, not a big star, but someone that comes through in a clutch moment. If you had to pick a candidate that could be this unsung hero on each team, who would you pick and why?
Well, it's really interesting that one, because the players at the moment are out due to the pandemic. I mean, it's at first I was quite, every day I was looking at the papers and seeing, you know, the Chino, okay, he's injured. Nyanglin, obviously, with the coronavirus. You've got Skriniar, Gledini, Radu, Young, all coronavirus. And then you're looking at Martinez, who's come back fatigued and he might not start because of Sanchez. And I'm thinking, this is, and Sensi, of course, I forgot about him, he's suspended. And you look over at Milan, Sancho, Conte, Rebic is going to be evaluated, Duarte, Gavia, and you're thinking, this is so depleted. It's going to be not the greatest of games. And I was thinking from an Inter perspective, they've really been hit with this. But then I thought, well, hold on a second. Actually, this is a positive. Not positive that anyone's, that sounded wrong. Not positive that all these players are out with coronavirus. That's terrible. But what I'm trying to say is, from a footballing perspective, Conte, his squad and the depth, this is when it has to be proven. And in my thought process now is, there's players in that squad that he's not bringing out of the Primavera. You're bringing out players like, you know, the Kolarovs, the Vidals. They look around and they're seeing Perisic. He's just won a treble. You know, Alexis Sanchez, okay, he might not start, but he's in good form. And, you know, they're all experienced players. But one of those players who's the most improved on Inter's side, who I look at, who's had to change his position, who's now can play very much at centre-back as well, and also has a little penchant for a late goal, is Danilo D'Ambrosio. I think he's one of the most improved players that Inter have had. He hasn't been good. I mean, he's really come on leaps and bounds in a very latter stages of his career. And if you were going to say, you know, who's the person everyone's thinking of, you know, Lautaro plays or Lukaku, Hakimi now with what he's done, I'm going to stick D'Ambrosio in there, because one of his best traits, he's almost Zanetti-like in the sense, only one sense, not many, but in the sense that he just doesn't give up. You know, his fitness is incredible and he never gives up. And that's why sometimes late on in the games, you know, he does come up with the odd goal. And for Milan, it's really difficult, because I think so many of the players, I think they're a good unit. They're almost becoming, if you take Ibra out of that, because it's always going to be Ibra, they're becoming a little bit Atalanta-ish in some respects, as in you can take any of these players out of the team and put another one in, and the unit still works the same. And I think that's what's been the best thing about this season. But I think Kessié is really impressed. And I think he's another one of those players in a game where it's going to be very different, very gritty, I think. It's going to be played at a really high tempo. You know, I think that he's one of those players, again, who just got that never say die attitude. And so whether he's an unlikely hero, I don't know, but I'd certainly go for him.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think D'Ambrosio is without a doubt the most likely candidate. So great shout there. So we've definitely talked on how both teams improved this summer, but they are in different stages of their project. I think that's definitely a fair statement. But if you had to draw an ideal starting 11 combining the two teams, what would it look like? How many players would you have on Inter? And you can pick any formation that works for you.
I think Donnarumma's going to be the goalkeeper. I think Handanovic, you know, makes mistakes, but overall it's fantastic. But I've done Donnarumma, but I just think that he's going to continue to come on. I mean, when you think of, you can be critical of him, but you look at his age and he's just ridiculous. I think the defense. If I go, I'm going to get three at the back. I think that it's tough, isn't it, that one? I've got to put Skriniar and De Vrij in there if I'm going three at the back. And I know that he's not probably had his best moments this season, and maybe even a partly last. But I think that Romagnoli, I'm going to put in there because I just think there's so much potential with him. So wing backs. Now, this is the fun one because it's so easy for me. I think you've got to have Theo Hernandez from Milan. And the way Hakimi started, I'm just keeping him there. And then realistically, midfield. So how many have I got now? Three to go in midfield. This is where it gets a little bit tough for me because I certainly would like to say that Barella has got to go in. I'm going to put Kessié in as well. And then Interton's going to go mental if I put Sagnoli in. I'd like to put Eriksen in, but he's not playing. You know, he's
I
not
know.
Playing, he's not
yeah, maybe so, you would, but Conte wouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd rather, I think I'd rather annoy the Inter fans than Antonio Conte. So I'll put Tonali in there because I just think the potential is incredible. Which leads me to forwards. And everyone's going to be saying, how can you not put Ibrahimovic in there? But I'm going to put Lukaku and Lautaro in simply because of the connection. Those two have. I'm sure I've missed someone there. I'm sure I'll get absolutely slated for that. But yeah, I think that Lautaro and Lukaku, I think that would be a pretty decent side.
Yeah, no, very well done. Very well done. Well, Richard, before I let you go, I have to ask you, what's your prediction for this game?
2-2. I think 2-2. The reason being, I think that it's going to be a bit cagey because, as I said, Milan, even though they're in good form, will be really wary of Inter's the wing backs and the two forwards. And I think they'll be wary of the goals that Inter can probably produce. So I think it'll be quite a counter-attacking game and a bit of a chess game at first. And then I think it'll just go crazy because they also know that Inter's back line is, you know, Kolarov, De Vrij and D'Ambrosio can be got at. Handanovic kind of, he's got to play out from the back. And I think that Inter will just go gun-ho at some point. But they will also have to be a little bit careful at the start of the game because they'll also be thinking of their own defensive frailty. So, yeah, I think a draw will probably end up being a fair result. I think it'll be a decent game. And, 2-2.
Awesome. Well, Richard, I'm sure you'll be covering the aftermath of the game really well, as you normally do. If you guys enjoy Richard's interviews, and how could you not, definitely check out his awesome work on Football Italia and Gentleman Ultra. So thank you so much, my friend, for hopping on. I hope you enjoy the derby, and I look forward to talking to you again during the season.
Brilliant, David. Thank you, and continue doing a great job on this podcast. It's fantastic, and thank you for having me. It's an honor. Thank you.
All right. Great to have Richard on, one of the OGs of this podcast, you could certainly say. And well, the transition is just flawless because if there's an OG of this podcast or if there's just a spokesperson from this podcast, it is Mr. Thousand Names. So it's just a segment that's always fun because Thousand is fun, but also it just reminds me that we got club football coming back, David. So let's get to game picks with you and Thousand Names. Who are you guys picking?
Absolutely. Yeah, and he's back. And it's always dangerous when I don't review these ahead of time and I just read them off on the podcast. But Thousand Names did send me his picks for three games. I'll pick as well. First up, of course, the Milan derby, which we just previewed with Richard Hall. Thousand Names has Milan winning 2-0, goals by Kalinoglu and Ibrahimovic. The comment is Lautaro's going to miss a penalty. Vidal's going to get a red card. Father Pioli is going to take Conte by the hand and teach him the game of football. And he said Inter have their focus on the Champions League this season. That's the reason why they lost. In Italian, Inter Milan 0-2, Kalinoglu Ibra, Lautaro sbaglia rigore, espulso Vidal, Padre Pioli prende per mano Conte, gli spiega come si gioca calcio, Inter con la testa alla Champions, fidatevi. This is a tough game. I feel like almost every time I go for the draw when I pick in the derby, but you know what? I'm going to be bold for one. And actually, I'm going to pick Inter to win. I know Milan have been good. They've had a pretty soft schedule, And I know Inter has a lot of players coming back from international break, and Alexis Sanchez might be hurt, but I'm going to have Inter winning 1-0, and I'll give a goal to, I'm going to go Lautaro, since Thousand has a missing a penalty. Next up, probably other than the derby, the best match this weekend. Really, really exciting. Napoli-Atalanta. And by the way, next week we'll have Napoli outsider back, which is, should be fun. So for 1,000 names, has Napoli beating Atalanta 3-0 with a brace by Mertens and a goal by Koulibaly. And he says Gattuso is going to turn around that 3-0 loss that was decided by the sporting justice and destroy Gasperini. He says Atalanta has too many South American players coming back from the international break, and that's why they'll lose, and that Bakayoko is the prince of the midfield. I love that Bakayoko signing for Napoli, by the way. So in Italian, Napoli-Atalanta 3-0, Mertens, doppietta, Koulibaly, Gattuso ribalta il tavolino e abbatte Gasperini. Atalanta con troppi sudamericani rientrati dalle nazionali, Bakayoko principe del centrocampo. Tough game. So Atalanta, when Sarri was at Napoli, he always had their number. Gattuso's a little different. I'm going to go draw. I'm going to go 2-2. I'm going to say Osimhen finally scores. I'll give Mertens a goal. And Zapata, I'm going to give Zapata a brace against his former club. Last match, Juve traveling to Crotone. 1,000 names has it 1-1. Goals by Chiesa and Simi. And he says Pirlo on the pitch can't win anymore. Paratici had a horrible window. And Bonucci is a former player by now. In Italian, Crotone, Juve 1-1. Chiesa, Simi. Pirlo sul campo non vince più. Mercato ridicolo di Paratici. Bonucci, ex giocatore. Crotone has not shown much. We know 1,000 likes to pick against Juve here. I'm going to pick Juve to win. I'm going to go Juve 2-0. And I'm going to give your boy Morata a goal, Alex. And I'll go with Rabiot scoring here. So those are our game picks for the week. And now before we get to Mark Doyle for everyone, let's get to a special part of the podcast for patrons. If you enjoy Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. We did a lot of bonus interviews this week. We chatted with some of our patrons. It was a lot of fun to chat Calcio with them. We also have some fun articles. So if you enjoy our coverage of Serie A transfers, you'll love being a patron. And we also support a great charity, the Insuperabili, who run football camps for kids with disability in Italy. Excited to welcome the next guest. We've had Mark Doyle on for a few years now already on the podcast. He's become one of our favorite guests. He's deputy features editor for Goal. He is based in Italy, in Bologna, which is superb. But Mark has kind of become our Atalanta guy. He was early on the Atalanta hype, and we always enjoy chatting Atalanta with him. So Mark, it's a real pleasure to welcome you back. And as you tweeted, it's not even close. Atalanta is the best show in town if you enjoy football. So welcome back to Calcioland, my friend.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be back. Thanks very much for having me. And yeah, it's always so much fun to discuss Atalanta, because it's so much fun to watch them. So I'm more than happy to become your unofficial Atalanta.
Absolutely. Awesome. Okay, so let's start here. Obviously, they started the season really strong. I'm glad we've had a little international break, so maybe we're not overreacting to this. But do you believe Atalanta's in the mix for the Scudetto with Inter, Juve? Do you think they can't compete with them?
I don't think they're favorites, but I genuinely do think they can compete with them. I think we're not just basing that, obviously, on this incredible start that they've had this season, winning their first three games in Serie A for the first time in the club's history. So it's I know we're looking back, as you alluded to there, the Atlanta hype train has been running for quite some time now. So I'm kind of basing this on their form even in 2020, but even going further back. And yeah, admittedly, you know, we saw the wave build come out there again. Gazzetta dello Sport published them the other day, and Atalanta are way down the list, you know, and that's what they're around, you know, the market of Bologna and stuff like that. So in theory, they shouldn't be able to compete. But what they're doing and have been doing is logic defying, given the size of the club, the size of their budget. And if you analyze it rationally, it's very easy to make a strong case for a Scudetto challenge. So they have a settled side, they have a clear, coherent strategy, they have a firmly established way of playing football in which everybody knows their roles perfectly. Those that don't, you know, the new addition, they'll learn it soon enough. They'll learn the Atalanta way under Gasparini. And the majority of the recent arrivals were primarily purchased to provide depth anyway, because the big concern over Atalanta was whether they could maintain this kind of dynamic style of play that they have over the course of an entire campaign, whether they could withstand, you know, injuries to key men. And yet last season, they were still going strong right up until arguably the final half hour of the longest, toughest season in football history. It was only really in the final third of that Champions League quarterfinal against PSG that they kind of looked tired. And that was because, you know, they had Papu had already gone off. Illichic didn't even make it to Lisbon. So in theory, if you're looking at their summer business, and I know it's been an argument that's been pushed by a couple of the players as well, that they should be at least stronger this season than they were last season. Yes, a couple of the players like Papu and Illichic are a year older, but let's not forget that fundamentally what Atalanta is doing is the triumph of the collective. It's not founded upon individual brilliance or superstar quality, even though there are great players in the team. It is really, it's a true team and a beautifully kind of constructed and perfectly run machine that is far greater than the sum of its parts. So I think the rest of the Serie A should be concerned. I think this is a team to be afraid of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you mentioned, obviously, Atalanta is a great attack. We're not discovering it today. They lead Serie A in goals with 13. Really dynamic, but they could be even better because Illichic has yet to play this season. And I would say one of their biggest summer acquisition was Miranchuk, another offensive player. So, A, how do you think they will integrate? And is it possible Atalanta can be even better offensively? I mean, Illichic last season was in conversation for the best player in the league, period. It's pretty remarkable.
Incredible. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's mind-boggling to think that they could be even more excited, they could be even more adventurous, that they could be even more free-scoring. I agree with you 100%. I think Miranchuk is a really, really interesting signer. I think he's the pick of the bunch. Obviously, he hasn't started yet. The plan obviously was, because of his injury, he obviously arrived in Bergamo injured. The plan always was that he would come in after the international break, so we should see him soon, fitness permitting. I don't think there's any rush, because I think the squad depth is actually there, which is remarkable for such a small provincial club. I think we're all excited to see him play. I think he should prove a really, really good addition. I think he's at a good age, about to turn 25, I think, for this move. I think he's a wealth of experience. I think he made his professional debut at 17 in Russia. He's been a Russia international for about 5 years, so he's versatile, he has a nice goal. So at 15 million euro, he could be like one of these, another kind of really shrewd signing for a club that's become renowned for him. The Illichic situation is obviously harder to analyse. Obviously, the guy has gone through a very difficult period in his time, in his life, let's say. I think we can all relate to that. We've all had tough times. Jesus, we're living through what is a tough time for the entire world at the moment. So
yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of empathy there and a lot of patience, given it particularly because he's about to return to what has become and what was always a very pressurised environment. So what we're hearing is that he'll be in the squad potentially for this weekend's game against Napoli, which would be huge, as you alluded to. The guy is one of the best players in Serie A. He's integral to how they play the game. Obviously, I don't want to put, you know, nobody wants to put pressure on him. But the great thing is, like, he's loved by the Atalanta fans, who've already been posting, you know, messages of support outside the training ground. The whole club is clearly behind him. Gasparini's been saying, you know, we're not going to rush him, we'll give him time. But he's actually surprised us at how ready he is. So I think they've also done a great job without him. So I don't think there's any need to rush him in that sense. So my just big hope is that he comes back at his best, because I think every neutral should hope that Illichic comes back at his best, because the guy is outrageously talented. I think he's a joy to behold. And it was unfortunate that after he kind of announced himself to a lot of casual European football fans last year with that 4-goal haul against Valencia, it was a shame he couldn't participate in Lisbon. But at the end of the day, as we all know now, there are more important things in life than football. And I'm just glad that he's back. I'm just glad that we're back at the stage where we're talking about Illichic being back on the football field.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's shift the attention a little bit to the defense. I would say maybe other than Miranchuk, maybe the most significant addition is Romero, who Juve owned, was in Genoa past few seasons. So, you know, on the surface, it's hard to improve a team like Atalanta, especially up front. Definitely on defense, there is room for improvement. Now, I don't know how much of an upgrade Romero is on what they have. I think he is a slight upgrade, but I want to ask you, does it even matter when they're scoring so many goals? Because I was watching the first few games and I was like, you know what, these guys create so many chances that maybe it doesn't even matter if Romero is that big of an upgrade. So A, do you see it as an upgrade, and B, do you think they can just outscore teams and it won't even really matter how good or bad their defense is?
Yeah, it's a great question, isn't it? Because it kind of gets to the heart of Gasperini's footballing philosophy. Obviously, I think they'd like to be stronger defensively. They'd like to concede fewer goals, which, you know, would be a scary prospect because they'd be hammering teams. But there is an inherent risk in the way they play, one that Gasperini has long embraced. I mean, he had that epiphany a few years ago at Genoa when he said it would be better to play a three at the back and go 1v1 versus Juve's forward line, I remember, in one particular game. And he discussed that two or three times. And that means putting a lot of faith in your defender's ability to defend one-on-one, and but he feels obviously the reward is worth the risk. So Atalanta's outrageous numbers, as you've alluded to, I think they scored 13 goals already in three games, which is just ridiculous. It would suggest that Gasperini is right. I think they are capable of outscoring any side in Serie A. I think if you look at the game against Lazio, they looked like scoring every time they got a chance. They were, and they've become very clinical as well. And I thought Gasperini made an interesting point. He said they're more mature now. They're more, even more composed. They know how to better manage games. So for Romero, looking at him specifically, I'm kind of viewing that transfer in the same way you are. I'm a little bit reluctant to dig it up because I feel like, okay, we could have called it a decent year in a really terrible Genoa team. But there are concerns. I was speaking to our kind of mutual friend Carlo Garganese recently about the transfer, and he was saying his big concern is his discipline. He seems to pick up a lot of yellows and reds. He's kind of a bit reckless at times, so that would be a concern, obviously. And obviously, playing at Atalanta, as I discussed here, you do get isolated more as a defender, as a centre half. You know, even if you're playing in the back three, because the wing backs are just so adventurous. So he's going to have to be really careful in terms of, you know, one defending and not diving in and really standing up to an attacker. So it's an interesting transfer. I do think at the very least, it's got potential because it adds numbers at the back, which is where they need them, I think. But it's going to tell us the whole, it's a very important transfer for them, I think, in a way, because they kind of need it to be accepted. They would like to have someone, another reliable centre-half to be able to stick in the back line. So it's a thankless task in this Atlanta team because you do not get the credit. You do not get, make all the headlines playing at the back. But if he can produce, if he can become a solid, reliable centre-half for them, it'll make an already strong team even stronger. So that would be the hope, I suppose.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about the midfield, and specifically two players that often come off the bench and really are pretty awesome. And this is Pazalic, who now Atalanta owns outright, and Malinovskyi, who I thought last season was a very nice signing for them. Yeah. So what do you make of these players? And, you know, what a luxury it is to be able to bring guys like this off the bench pretty often. So what do you make about the impact of them and how important are they ultimately for Gasperini and Atalanta?
I think hugely important for the reasons you've touched on there, and even I've mentioned it earlier, is that Atalanta's success last season, it just wouldn't have been possible without guys like Pazalic and Malinovskyi. If you look at Lazio last season, or even now, you could say they've got a great start in 11, one which had put them in contention of winning the league last year. But when the game started to come thick and fast last year, they kind of buckled under the strain, understandably, and their lack of depth was exposed. Atalanta, by contrast, I'd argue, were able to keep going thanks to their ability to rotate without affecting the team's performances or the results. And I think that was down to guys like Pazalic and Malinovskyi and Muriel coming off the bench. So in the modern game, which is played at this kind of really high pace and high intensity with such a reliance on aggressive pressing high up the field, you just cannot compete unless you have 14 to 16, let's say, quality players. So you need that strong bench. I think Atalanta have that. Even accounting for the sale of a useful player like Castagna, I still think Atalanta have a bench that can actually sustain this Scudetto challenge, and I'll also compete in Europe as well in the Champions League.
Absolutely. And hey, they did it last season, the Italian team that got it further. So absolutely. Yeah. So you mentioned Castagne. Let's talk about that because that's pretty interesting to me. You know, in recent years, we've had a lot of former Atalanta players that have been busts on other teams. But I will say that's kind of changing a little bit. Yeah. I mean, we also saw Frank Kessie become really a very good player for Milan. But Castagne's off to a great start at Leicester. So in a way, you could say that Atalanta could be even better in the future because they'll still be able to sell players for a lot. So what do you make about this changing perception? And do you think it was fair in the past to say, you know what, it's kind of fool's gold to go buy an Atalanta player because he won't be the same on your team? So A, do you agree that that's changing? And what do you make of that perception?
Yeah, first of all, I did understand the perception. I understood the argument completely in that, you know, there were certain players that looked amazing at Atlanta within a perfectly honed setup. You know, take them out of that safe environment and some of them struggle. You know, so that makes sense to me. I get that. However, I also agree that this perception is changing and is changing rightly because while Atalanta is a very, very special club and it is a very particular setup and they are undoubtedly greater than the sum of their parts, as I acknowledged earlier, they also possess some fine footballers. I mean, I don't think you shine in that system without a high degree of footballing intelligence and technical quality. I think they're essential. So I think it's not only worth looking at Castagne, who, as you said, has been really, really impressive to date at Leicester. Looks like a really, really good boy. But also like players at Atalanta who are shining for their national teams, like Zapata and Muriel, both scored for Colombia during the week. Freuler scored for Switzerland. Gustin started in the same game for Germany. So these are quality sides. You know, Hattabor and Zorin are featuring regularly now for the Netherlands. So to me, I see all of this, you know, and that's just based on the last week, as evidence that Gasparini's players can thrive under other coaches playing for other teams and playing other styles of football. So yeah, I think the perception is changing and rightly so.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's do some fun over-unders, which with Atalanta is a lot of fun because they score a lot of goals. So one player we didn't mention, another really good addition to the team, off to a fine start, is Sam Lammers, and his first goal at Atalanta was something. I tweeted, you know, that's what you need to do to stand out at Atalanta these days because they look really good. So he has one goal so far in Serie A, and these over-unders are just for Serie A. I'm going to set the total over-under at 6.5. So he needs 6 more goals in Serie A in that crowded front line. Do you think he'll get there?
Yeah, that's exactly the issue, isn't it? That it is a crowded front line now at this stage. I'm going to go over, though, because I spoke with a couple of guys from our Dutch edition to kind of get a better understanding of him and his strengths. And a lot of them seem to be of the opinion that it's a classic Atalanta sign and that he didn't play much that last season for PSV because of injury. He didn't want to sign a new contract, so when Atalanta came calling, you know, they were willing to cash in. But they say he was always considered a guy of real potential. As you mentioned there, his goal the other week was phenomenal. Like, it really showed off his skills and his quick feet, and it really did in an outstanding attacking display. That was kind of the one moment I took away from it. Was like, oh my god, that was definitely the highlight of the match, and he really did stand out. So I like what I've seen. I think he's the mark, obviously, with a really, really cool goal, and I think he looks like a kind of player who's going to pop up with a few goals here and there during the season. So, yeah, I'm gonna go back him to go over 6.5.
Okay, I like it. Next up, Muriel, who has 2 already. Last season, he was awesome. Granted, Zapata was injured for a little while, but he mainly was off the bench. So last season, he had 18. Because of that crowded front line, I am going to lower this a decent amount. So I'm going to set the over-under at 13.5 for him. He has 2. So he needs 12 more goals to go over. Do you think Muriel can do that?
You're a very clever bookmaker, actually, kind of tempting me in with the lower one. I would be very tempted to hand over my money on this one. At least put the bet down. The guy's obviously like a master of scoring off the bench. I can't see him like maintaining his ridiculous minutes to goal ratio. That was just absolutely insane last season when he was doing. But I do think he'll get more starts because I do think they'll rotate, you know, even if everybody's fit, which I don't think will happen anyway, in what's going to be a really hectic, intense season physically on the players, also the cup mentally as well, let's face it. But I think he'll get more goal time, more game time. I think he'll get close to the same level of goals. I'm not sure he'll get 18 in Serie A alone, but I can see him, yeah, I could see him getting to 14, so I'll go over again.
I love Muriel, but I think he's going to go slightly under. Let's go to Zapata, who has one. Last season had 18. He is the main striker for Atalanta. If I had to pick a starter, number nine, he is it. I'm going to set the over-under at 15.5 for him. He has one, so he needs 15 more. Do you think he can get there?
Right. I think he can get there, but I think he's the one that's going to suffer from the overcrowded nature of the attack. And my reason is this. I think he's in good form. He looks in good shape to me, and again, for club and country, as I mentioned. But I think, he might even be prioritized in Champions League matches if they go on a good run, and I think he might be looked after a bit more. So maybe it'll be switched around a bit. Don't get me wrong. This guy has the ability to score 20 goals in Serie A, no problem at all. But maybe it'll be him that suffers a little bit and only ends up with maybe 15 goals in the league, but gets about, you know, 25 altogether. So I'll be bold here and just go a little bit under.
Okay, I like it. Yeah, you're right. There's definitely one who is going to have to be under. And last one, your favorite player, Papu Gomez, who already has four. A really great. And what beautiful goals. He does not score the easy ones. So last season, he had 14. I'm going to set the over-under at 13.5. He already has four, which is a lot. So he needs 10 more. Do you think he gets there?
Yeah, if he hadn't made such a storming start to the season, in which nearly every shot seems to go in, I'd have probably gone under. But as you say, he's got four already. He looks brimming with confidence. He looks really sharp to me. I don't know what you think, but he looks like, I don't know, about 5 years younger. He's aging like a fine wine. It's ridiculous. He looks so, so nimble, so light at his feet. So his shooting has been explosive so far and deadly accurate. So even if they wrap Gomez and cotton wool, as they should at times during the season, during this season of all seasons, surely he'll get another nine in Serie A. So even if they prioritize Champions League matches at certain times, I'm going to go over again. So I'm going to go Gomez to above 13.5.
I know you do. Awesome. So before I let you go, Mark, and it was awesome to chat about Atalanta. I know you recently wrote about Chiesa, so I just want to ask you a little bit the overarching of your view on the transfer. And I think you're bang on that Fiorentina probably regrets not selling him last year, but maybe this is also not an ideal fit for him. So what do you make about this transfer? Is there a clear winner, or kind of almost everyone is not in an ideal situation here?
Yeah, I think the latter. I agree 100% with the latter, because don't get me wrong, I like Chiesa. I was raving about him a lot during the European Championships, the under-21s last summer, and I kind of thought, okay, this guy is definitely one of the best young players in Europe. He's shown that. I thought he was excellent, particularly against the group stage games against Spain. And he's a bit of an enigmatic character. I know that Fiorentina fans, a lot of them, were kind of happy to see him go at this stage. He'd become a distraction. There was questions over his temperament, his attitude, this kind of thing. They definitely should have sold him. They're not alone in that regard. Napoli obviously have probably regrets over not cashing in on Koulibaly last year when they could have gotten like 100 million. So, it's happened. Nobody could have foreseen what happened with the coronavirus kind of affecting the market to a large degree. My issue with Chiesa is that I really think he has great talent and potential. I want him to develop what I kind of think he has to play. And I'm looking at the Juventus team, and there's so many options, and it's such a fluid setup at the moment, and it's hard to predict who's going to play where and how regularly, more importantly, that I kind of think, is he going to play every week? And is he going to be used as a wing-back? Because this is what we were slating Yassini about, Fiorentina, was playing him as a wing-back, and we call it doesn't make the most of his obvious skills. So could he end up there at Juventus? And that would be my kind of concern at the moment, is that there's no clearly defined role for him. It's by no means certain that even more established stars are going to play on a regular basis. He's competing with guys for the starting spot who are really, really, really talented. So my concern is that he kind of gets lost and he becomes like a utility guy, which can be just so detrimental to the development of a guy that's, 23? He is young, but he's not super young. He needs to be playing every week. So I this is one I'm definitely reserving judgment on. And that's what I was trying to convey in the piece that gone. I'm not entirely sure this is the right move at the right time for this guy, even though I have a lot of faith in his ability.
Yeah, no, well said. And for me, it's for everyone, even Juve. I know they didn't pay a lot up front, but they are going to have a pretty big bill coming due in a few years. And you have to wonder, was he really the guy? Because they have Kulusevski. Yeah. To me, those are pretty similar players. And yeah,
but that's the big one. Yeah.
And I agree with you. At the Euro that you covered, he really showed a lot. That's when I believed more. But Mark, I can't thank you enough. You were awesome. Thank you so much for hopping on the podcast. Always wonderful to chat about Atalanta with you.
Dude, it's an absolute pleasure. I love coming on, and it's great. Always great to talk to you, man.